This is an iHeart podcast.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, the unexpected, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the man who went down that day.
On Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, you'll hear about these heroes and what their stories tell us about the nature of bravery. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about national divorce. Every single time we talk about this, it gets spicy, it gets interesting. People get mad, people agree, people disagree, people yell, people argue. That means it's a good topic. Debate is good. Let me just give it to you from where I see it. This is how I see it. The United States of America, I love it. I'm assuming you love it. That's why you're sitting here watching our special on I'm Right. I know you love it, but let's stop for a second. We love what America has always been, do we not? The stars and stripes, the land of the free. We're proud of our country. I am proud of my country. I would die for my country. I'm sure you probably feel the exact same way, and that's a good thing. But we do have to always have perspective, and it's very, very difficult, very, very difficult to have perspective, especially with things you love. It's easy to look across the street at the neighbor kid and say, man, that kid's a screw-up. Look at him. He's going to be a dirtball one day. It's a lot harder to look at your own kid when he's screwing everything up and say the same things. You don't have perspective. It's hard for us to have perspective on America, so let's have a historical perspective on America. Nations rise and nations fall. They just do. You want to do a little thought experiment? We're not going to do it right now, but go look at a map of Europe 500 years ago. Not even ancient history. 500 years ago, look at a map of Europe. Then look at a map of Europe today. Nations rise, fall, break up. That's how the history of the world has gone. And so we as Americans do always have to understand, we always have to keep in the back of our mind, as much as we love America, there is an expiration date at some point. At some point. No, it's not tomorrow. I'm not saying that. But at some point, the close sign's going to go up in the window. Okay, so let's discuss where we are. Now that we understand that, what I just said isn't really arguable. It's a fact. So now that we understand that, let's discuss where we are. We are two different people now. I wish it wasn't so. I wish the cultural Marxists hadn't infiltrated this nation the way they have. But nevertheless, they have. You can accept this or not, but you share a country with people who hate you and hate the country. And they're not a tiny, insignificant minority. A large percentage of the United States of America, I'm not saying it's half, but it doesn't have to be, a significant percentage of the United States of America hates you and hates the country. And you cannot and should not live in a nation surrounded by people hostile to you, who hate you. These people, look, let's talk about illegal immigration right off the bat. Let's go down the list. There's five quick reasons. Illegal immigration. Securing your nation from illegal immigration is a base part of being a nation. That's not a right-wing thing or left-wing thing. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's not even American. Again, just open a history book. Nations control who can and can't come in. That's just kind of a basic way to run a nation. How on earth are you and me supposed to share a nation with people like Jerry Nadler?
And we need immigrants in this country. Forget the fact that the farm, that our vegetables would rot in the ground if they weren't being picked by many immigrants.
These people took power and they opened up the border on purpose. We share a country with people who took power and purposely flooded the country with criminals. How do we keep sharing this place? Look, that's one issue. Let's talk about another one. This might be the biggest one. I want you to picture this. I want you to picture this. Put it to you this way. I want you to picture there is a child predator who lives across the street from you. You're sitting there with your kids in the house, and there is a known, convicted child predator who lives across the street from you. And not only does he live across the street from you, this is a human being who's very vocal. He's putting it on a Facebook or whatever. He's very vocal about the fact that he intends to prey upon children whenever he gets the opportunity. Could you live in that home? Should you live in that home? Should you exist across the street with a man like that when your children are at stake? Well, no, you're rolling your eyes, you're laughing, you're mocking, because of course you couldn't. You would never think about that. Well, that's how the communist thinks about your children. The communist believes your children not only belong to him, the communist believes he should be able to maim and mutilate your children, turning them into freaks for his purpose. Over and over and over again, the communist steps up on camera and claims, hey, your kids, they belong to all of us.
Rebecca put a teacher's creed into words when she said, there's no such thing as someone else's child. No such thing as someone else's child. Our nation's children are all our children.
How do you share that neighborhood? Look, let's stay on kids. If there was, all right, we'll stay in your neighborhood, across the street, not a child predator, you know, the gross, super gross kind, but a child killer. If there was someone across the street who kills children, has done it before, and has announced his intention to keep doing it, and loves it, brags about it, should you live in the same neighborhood? Or does one of you have to go? I'm not going to let this abortion issue go. Wanting to kill your baby, feeling like it's an option to kill your baby, should not be a thing. I know this culture has rotted to the point where we're Sodom and Gomorrah, but this should not be a thing that occurs to anyone. Men, women, oh, I don't like it. I'll just kill it. But we share a nation with lots of these people.
Or any restrictions on abortion?
I don't. I've always believed...
Even in the third trimester?
I believe that choice is between a woman, her doctor, and a God if she prays to one.
You would veto any law with any limit on abortion?
I would veto any additional restrictions on abortion that are sent to my desk as governor, yes.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth. Would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified?
My bill would allow that, yes.
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mothers.
How do we live in the same neighborhood with that? We're different people, man. Look, we have a different religion. Look, let's be honest about it. And it doesn't matter what your beliefs are. We're not even talking about you. They have a religion. And it's not just a religion. Their religion is one of those exclusive ones, meaning it's not... They believe what they believe, and you just get to believe whatever you believe. No, 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 no. No, you will bend the knee and pray to their religion. You will. Why do you think they're so angry with Christianity today?
This movement was the foundation for January 6th. They were the moving elements that made January 6th and the insurrection happen. And now we have a Speaker of the House who is an avowed Christian nationalist.
This is very much in line with the overall attack on trans people writ large, because this is actually a focus by the Christian nationalist movement on anything that they consider to be outside of the gender binary. And so they put their loyalty to Trump and God before Constitution and country. I think it is the most heinous threat, and it is the largest domestic threat you could possibly think of at any point in our country. Right now it's happening.
We shouldn't live together anymore. We are different people, and we're just going to hurt each other. That's why we should divorce. And that's why, look, it doesn't matter whether you agree with everything I just said. It may make you uncomfortable, but I'm right. But it doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree. My opinion on it, your opinion on it, doesn't really matter. Divorce is coming. It's happening already. I'll explain next. Plus,
plus, plus. Pro Woche bis zu 50 Euro zusätzlich sparen. Plus, plus, plus. Mit der Netto Plus App. 10% Rabatt auf deinen Einkauf sichern. Dazu Payback-Punkte sammeln und sparen. Mach mehr Plus mit der Netto Plus App.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the men who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor: Stories of Courage from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Robert Blake, the first Black sailor to be awarded the medal, to Daniel Daly, one of only 19 people to have received the Medal of Honor twice. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, great. We have another continuing resolution. Of course we do. More spending, more omnibus. I can't wait to see what comes next. These people, Republican and Democrat, they just don't care about the value of our dollar. They don't even attempt to save it, as we can't pay for groceries. That's why we have to make preparations for a future that looks different than the one we've always known. That's why you call Oxford Gold Group. That's why you get gold or silver in your retirement. Don't let them blow that up. That's why you get gold or silver coins in your physical possession. And Oxford Gold Group, this is what I love the most about them, is they make it easy. It's laid back. You just make a phone call and they'll walk you through all of it. Hey, how do I fix my retirement? Hey, how do I get it in my physical possession? Just call, tell them I told you to call and they'll treat you special, I promise. 833-995-GOLD. 833-995-GOLD. All right, now I know that was a lot of national divorce. Here's where our differences are. Here are our irreconcilable differences, but let's just talk about the basics, the brass tacks of this whole thing. Because I can talk all I want about how we should separate and they should move and we should move, but of course, it's not going to happen in some official way, right? That's always been a dream of mine, but it's never going to happen. The communists sit down with me and a few other anti-communists on the right. We just sit down at a big table like this one and we kind of work out, hey, who gets the kids, who gets the car, who gets to find China, that kind of a thing. That's not going to happen. I know that. But let's move past that and talk about what is already happening. Not what you want, not what I want, what is already happening. Divorce is already happening. People are already divorcing. And they're doing this by moving. You see, here's the truth about humanity. This is not unique to America. It's not unique to red, blue, anything like that. Human beings will not live without end underneath a government that is hostile to them if they have options. If you have the ability to live in neighborhood A, where you and your family can be safe and happy and clean and free, or you can live in neighborhood B, and it's really dangerous and it's dirty and it's drugged out and it's crime-ridden, and you know you have the option, you're a moving van away of moving from ugly to beautiful. You will pack up and move from ugly to beautiful. People historically have died in droves just at the chance of getting from ugly to beautiful. Here in America, it's a moving van away.
You're calling up U-Haul. Come get us. They're already moving. Almost a million people in Florida in 2023 alone. New people in Florida. New York's, they've lost over 100,000. States like New York and California have lost so many people, they're now losing congressional seats. States like Texas, Florida, and others have gained so many people, they're gaining congressional seats. What I'm trying to say is, as blue America becomes more insane and more blue, what you see, what you are seeing, you don't need me to inform you of this, is this death spiral where they just go down and down and down because there's no more floor. There are no more moderate Democrats. There are certainly no Republicans that hold any power. So these communists just try to out-commie each other, and they go down and down and down and down. Well, as they spiral down without end, people, even people who haven't moved yet, maybe that's you, will eventually get to their breaking point, and they're saying, hey, I'm gone. I mean, you see states like California trying, and other states, I should note, trying to put into law, hey, if your child wants to cut his penis off, you have to let him do that and call him a woman or we'll take your kids away. Well, parents aren't going to live like that without end. People will not live underneath the crime in these blue states. The fees, how expensive it is. They will flee. And here's what happens. When they flee, they make the blue states bluer and they make the red states redder because, contrary to what many people believe, the people who move into red states are, by and large, red voters. So the blue state just lost even more red voters, so it's even bluer. A red state like Florida, we're going to have Governor Ron DeSantis on next, a red state like Florida just gets redder and redder and redder until it glows red. Well, how do you work that out as a nation when the federal government is as blue as the bluest states, but the red states have gotten redder and redder and redder? What you've done is you've created a situation where some sort of, I hate to say the word conflict, because I would really, really love it if we could do this whole thing without anybody getting hurt. That's my prayer. Some sort of conflict, argument, friction, if we really want to put a nice sounding word on it, some sort of conflict with the federal government and the blue states is inevitable. As the federal government and the blue states get more hardened, more communist, and the red states get more free, well, they're going to clash. And let's hope it's not something terrible like last time, some kind of horrible civil war or something like that. That would be the worst thing in the world. It's the last thing in the world I want. But it's going to happen. Separation. Anyway, let's talk to the governor about it, the governor of the great state of Florida. Ron DeSantis joins us next.
Plus, plus, plus.
Pro Woche bis zu 50 Euro zusätzlich sparen. Plus, plus, plus. Mit der Netto Plus App 10% Rabatt auf deinen Einkauf sichern. Dazu Payback-Punkte sammeln und sparen. Mach mehr Plus mit der Netto Plus App.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the men who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor: Stories of Courage from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Robert Blake, the first black sailor to be awarded the medal, to Daniel Daly, one of only 19 people to have received the Medal of Honor twice. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're not stuck in that timeshare. I know you don't want to pay those annual fees anymore. I know you're probably also getting this on the phone when you call and try to book. And, oh, sorry, call back next year. We're all booked up. That's the criminal thing about these things. They lock you in it. Your annual fees have doubled, and you can't ever get in the stupid thing now. Why don't you just get out? Stop paying these people for the timeshare you don't even use. That's what Lone Star Transfer does for you. They get you out. And I don't mean they get you a week off, a year off. When you get a hold of Oxford Gold Group, they will legally and permanently set you free. They put it in writing. 99% of the time, they are successful. All right? How's that sound? 99% of the time. Just call them. Just get a hold of them. 844-310-2646. Lone Star Transfer is a family company that will help you. 844-310-2646. Let's talk about a positive aspect of all this, about our country kind of going this way. As hard as it is to see something positive, there is positive in it. There are places where you and your family can go and still be free, still live the life your parents got to live and your grandparents got to live. It might involve a moving van. It might involve 100-degree temperatures and some mosquitoes in the summertime. But you can go to places like Florida, where Ron DeSantis has been fortifying for years now. Joining me now, Governor Ron DeSantis. Of course, you know who he is, author of the book, The Courage to Be Free. Governor, it was stunning to me. This, of course, came to the forefront during COVID when I would travel. My wife and I would travel around the country for various things. And you'd go to New York City, and it was like a zombie apocalypse. And we'd go down to Florida to have a vacation with the boys. And everyone's happy. Everyone's open. Everything's having a good time. And we're looking around thinking, gosh, we have to move here. How'd you do that?
Well, you know, the thing about it is there was such a hysteria at that time. And I had never, you know, obviously I'd only been governor for a year. No governors had really experienced a major pandemic. And I just started to say, okay, it's one thing to have Fauci and these people saying this, but what is actually happening on the ground? And what it seemed to me is after, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of this, I'm like, these policies are not the right policies. You've got to keep things going. You've got to have kids in school. You got to protect people's rights to make the best decisions for themselves. So we went down that road to much attacks. People in the media especially were relentless. And I probably got attacked more on that than anything I've ever done. And yet, after the kids are in school, after our theme parks were open, I mean, we had Universal Studios open 6 weeks into COVID, 8 weeks into COVID. Life went on. And I thought, well, people are going to see this. Aren't all these other jurisdictions just going to follow suit? And what happened was places like New York, Chicago, California, places in the Pacific Northwest, they clung to unscientific, draconian COVID policies for years, whether that was business restrictions, mask mandates, vax mandates, school closures. And it really helped destroy some of these societies. And I can tell you, just in Florida, we've always had people that have moved from the Northeast, moved from the Midwest. But when I started seeing license plates from California, when we'd see people flooding in from Washington State and Oregon, that's a pretty big move to move all the way across the country. You knew that it was just a radically different approach. And I remember I would always see people who would land at the airport during those days in Florida who had been in those jurisdictions. And it was almost like they were flying into West Berlin at the height of the Cold War. It was just totally, totally different. And I think that if you look at Florida, we've led the nation in in-state migration every year since I've been governor. Those areas are all losing people, and some for the first time, like California. Part of it is the COVID insanity they inflicted on their people. Part of it is not attending to the rule of law. We're very tough on that in Florida, and our crime rate's at a 50-year low. Part of it is education. Parents don't want the indoctrination in the schools, and we've stood strong against that. So for all those factors, we've really been, since I've been governor, a refuge of sanity in a world gone mad.
Governor, I'm glad you brought up the rule of law, because this Jeffrey Epstein stuff has always bothered me quite a bit. Obviously, not just the horrible crimes and the innocent women, but that the powerful people so oftentimes just get away with things. The people who aren't powerful, who don't hold any positions or money, they get trampled on, and powerful people get away with things. So is that why you're doing what you're doing? What are you doing with these Epstein documents that we've all wanted to see for so long?
Well, just as you said, I mean, this happened obviously decades ago. This came to a head legally in 2006 through 2008, so long before I was governor. And what ended up happening is there was this really opaque deal that was struck with federal prosecutors in the Southern District of Florida to route the case through Palm Beach County. And then he got this sweetheart sentence for really relatively minor offenses compared to what he actually did. And this was something that has obviously been a major problem because he had a lot of wealth. He lived in one of the wealthiest enclaves in the United States, a lot of connections. And so you have all these victims that never received justice. So fast forward, I became governor. I launched a criminal investigation into how this happened to where he was given this slap on the wrist. What happened, though, is our investigators were running in to grand jury rules. Grand jury material is secret in the state of Florida, like most states. And so they weren't able to have access to that. So we needed to change Florida law in order to be able to open up the Epstein grand jury material. And so the legislature finally passed a bill for me to sign, which says, and this is relatively rare situations, but a situation like Epstein, that the public does have a right to have that grand jury material disclosed. So they are going to do that. The bill's effective July 1st. I signed it in Palm Beach. We had some of the victims were there with us. I mean, these are women now that are in their late 30s, but you know, they were like 13, 14, 15 when this was happening back decades ago. So, and the thing is, what they said that is that they're just like, thank you, because we've never gotten any closure at all on any of this because of the way it's been handled. So I think that this will be important for the public. I think people have a right to know. And here's the thing. Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison in Florida from federal charges, but she's actually housed in a Florida federal prison. And Epstein, you know, how his demise happened, you know, we can only talk about another time, but he's gone. Nobody else has been held accountable. Nobody. Are you kidding me? This whole thing has been going on in Florida, New York City, the Virgin Islands, and you have one person in jail and another one's deceased and that's it. So that'll be good. But what I also said is the federal government should release all of its Epstein files. And Joe Biden has the ability to do that. He should do, and if he needs legislation, he should go to Congress and ask them to legislate the release. But my sense would be, hopefully we'll get some answers with what Florida's doing, but I think there's a lot of stuff in the federal government's possession because they were involved in multiple jurisdictions. And as we know, justice was never adequately served in this case.
No, certainly not. I can't imagine why a hands-on guy like Joe Biden would want those files kept secret. But let's move on and talk about another set of groomers, the Disney World thing. Governor, it breaks my heart. 10 years ago, I took my family down to Disney World, obviously. We had a blast riding the rides. It's freaking Disney World. It's part of America. And now you get to go to Disney World and watch princesses who have beards there. They decided they wanted to teach your second grader about sex. What happened? And what did you do to these people?
Well, Jesse, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I grew up in Florida. And we mm-hmm. lived for a time. I actually lived in the Orlando area as a young kid for a couple years where we were going, you know, based on where my dad was working at the time. And and back then, as a Florida resident, you'd go to a park for like $15. And I'd go to Magic Kingdom. That back then, it was just Magic Kingdom and Epcot. But you'd go. I rode all the rides. I did so many times. And it's just something that was important for our state and really an all-American brand. We had a bill a couple years ago in Florida to protect kids and to protect the rights of parents when it comes to indoctrination in the classroom with the sexual matters like transgenderism. And we took a position to just say, we're not going to be telling elementary school kids that their gender is a choice. We're not going to be getting involved into teachers prying into these types of matters. And I think that is something that the overwhelming percentage of parents agreed with. You know, Disney, for whatever reason, decided to fight us on that, came out opposed to the bill, tried to kill the bill. A lot of people thought I would have to veto the bill just because they're the 800-pound gorilla in Florida politics and no one really goes against them. But, you know, I'm a dad. I've got young kids. I got a first grader, I've got a kindergartner, and I got a preschooler. And it's sad to say, but as a parent, I now have to be concerned if they put on a Disney program, you know, what may be trying to shove down their throat. That was not true when I was a kid. It's certainly not consistent with Walt's vision. But that, unfortunately, what's happened And, you know, we basically were in a situation where they were pledging to overturn our law. They were going to sue on it. They were going to do all this, which, look, I don't think a publicly traded company should be getting involved in this. But if they want to do that, fine. However, they had all these special privileges that they had built up over many decades, which is effectively the biggest corporate welfare scheme in all of America. And so we undid that. We took that away and said, you know what? You're not going to be able to have this corporate cronyism where they actually control the local government entirely in Central Florida. So this is the 1 year anniversary of us imposing a state control board over this district, local government in Central Florida. And the media, when we did this, said, oh, it's going to be so bad, all this other stuff. None of what the critics said have come to pass. I had all these even establishment Republicans attacking me over this. What has actually happened is the district has cut taxes for all the tenant businesses in the district, about $12 million in savings. And then they've opened up bidding for district projects competitively. So now local businesses in the Orlando area can compete and get jobs. And so it's a difference between operating a local government in the best interest of the citizens rather than allowing one corporation to control it for its own personal interest. And so it's an example of good governance that we were able to unwind Disney's special privileges. And you know what? 4 or 5 years ago, nobody would have thought that was possible in the state of Florida.
Governor, wrapping this up, you were talking about Walt Disney, and it's fascinating to me how many of these wealthy titans throughout history, not just American, how many of their kids turn out to be useless commie scum, from the Fords and Walt Disney's to, I mean, the Che's parents. What is it about wealth and power as a parent that it makes your child more likely to be a piece of trash?
Well, I think you raise an interesting question. If you look at some of these foundations, like the Ford Foundation, some of these others, mm-hmm. where it really fell from great industrialists of the past, and now you go a few generations forward, and they are funding massive funding of hard left causes that are functionally anti-American and anti the values that allowed their families to accumulate that wealth in the first place. I've said that those organizations are things that we should look at for scrutiny because they get massive tax benefits. They don't really pay taxes, and yet they're really having a major political impact. It's interesting. When I was going through school, college and law school, you know, I was in some of these so-called elite institutions, and I was a working class kid. I was a baseball player. A lot of the kids that I played baseball or that were on the football team that I knew from college came from more blue-collar, middle-class families, and they were all very pro-American. The folks that had been legacies from these universities or came from some of those multi-generational families of wealth, they tended to be the ones who were the most anti-American and were most left-wing in their activism. So it's interesting because they would fashion themselves as like standing up for the working people. Yet I was one of those working people making minimum wage jobs to skate through. And I actually believed in the values of this country, and they had benefited so much from it, and they turned their back on it.
Governor, appreciate you very much. I'm glad you're there. We'll be moving there shortly, I'm sure. Thank you, sir. All right. James Lindsay disagrees with me vehemently about national divorce. Thinks it's a disastrous idea, and he might be right. I mean, I love James, very smart. Let's work it out, he and me. He and I don't know, went to community college. Next. Let's talk to James about all this. You know why? Because I learned from James, and he disagrees with me, vehemently disagrees with me. Joining me now, my friend James Lindsay. He has a new book out that is available now. I always tell you to buy James's books. I read everything he writes, books, articles, The Queering of the American Child. If you're a parent, potential parent, one of those children, this is a manual you need to get so you understand what these dirtballs are trying to do to your children. But we'll get to that here in a few. James, national divorce is horrible. I hate it. I say it is inevitable, though. You say it's disaster. In fact, you wrote an article saying national divorce is national suicide. I have had the floor. I give it to you.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the men who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Robert Blake, the first Black sailor to be awarded the medal, to Daniel Daly, one of only 19 people to have received the Medal of Honor twice. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I mean, I like that we start here, that we actually agree on a key piece of substance here, Jesse, which is that it would be really bad. And the disagreement is on whether it's inevitable, and if we accept that it's inevitable, whether or not we move intentionally into it. If we don't think it's inevitable, I think we should resist it as long as we can. We should try to keep these 50 states together. We should keep them united as it is. We should defend the Constitution. And I think you don't disagree with that, except that you think that the American left and right, if I'm not misrepresenting you, have drifted so far apart that there's no reconciliation.
Correct.
So we have less to disagree on, I think, than the viewers might fear. The fact of the matter is that I see no pathways to a good outcome, no pathways to a successful outcome for the right, or what I called in the essay red state, if it were to contrast it against blue state, if it were to break away and try to make a go of an independent state. I don't think that communists will allow an amicable divorce. I think what we'll find ourselves in is immediately in the same situation that we found ourselves in the Civil War, where Fort Sumner, which is off the coast of Charleston, South Carolina, was still a U.S. fort that remained part of the Union while Charleston or South Carolina had seceded, which sparked the actual war. It led to Lincoln declaring war on the Confederacy. But I think that that's going to be multiplied about 1,000 times over, given nuclear weapons, given that many of the states that are coded red on the map here have nuclear weapon installations and other U.S. military bases that the United States government, which will be blue state, is certainly not going to let go of. The international community is likely to follow up, come involved, blue hats, Chinese military coming in through Canada, probably through the southern border as well, to subdue these rogue states. And I think it's a game over scenario for the Constitution and a checkmate solution or situation for the global elites who are trying to overcome the U.S. Constitution by any means necessary.
Okay, there's all kinds of stuff I want to get to with that. Let's focus on that last part first. Overcome the Constitution. Haven't they already, though? I mean, look, I love the Constitution as much as you do. A tremendous founding document, but what is it anymore? If they've decided that it's trash, that they hate it, that they won't follow it anymore, then isn't it just a piece of paper now?
Well, I mean, we could ask the same question about the Bible. Is the Bible just a book, just a piece of paper? If there are no Christians to stand up to defend it, then what Christians would tell you? And I just came from a major pastors' conference out in Arizona yesterday, and these men, of course, are on fire for the Lord, and they're on fire for their beliefs. What they would tell you is that it's time for the church to be the church again. It's time for Americans, therefore, to be Americans again. We have to do a revival of constitutional principles, and we have to start advocating and fighting for them. We're seeing some wins in court. It's gone from losing virtually everything in court to winning about half of the things in court at the federal and appellate court level. And I think we have to keep pushing this. We need to awaken our judiciary. We need to get our lawyers activated and moving and funded to be able to fight against entities like the ACLU. And we have to understand that they're putting a full court press this year because this year is for them everything. And so they're spending down what seems like their infinite amount of money as fast as possible, and they're often discrediting themselves. So I don't give up faith or hope, but we have to have a renewal of our belief in the Constitution, and it's probably going to have to start with individuals and then move to localities, then move to states and work its way up.
James, why do you say this year is their everything? I agree with you. I just want you to put it into words for people. Why are they going all in, selling out every last bit of credibility? They're pushing all the chips to the center of the table. Why?
Well, partly there are two main reasons. Partly is the obvious reason, which is the election. The election is a crucial election for themselves. They understand that if Donald Trump or some, you know, legitimate Republican were to take the office of presidency, they're in big trouble. We're awake now. We can fight back now, and we can do it legally, and we can do it with a lot of effectiveness. And there are plans, and they're freaking out about those plans to do that. And it looks like if things were allowed to proceed as they are, you know, in a legal fashion, that Donald Trump is probably going to be the president by a landslide. And that's very scary for them. But secondly, it's not just that, you know, time is running out for them. It's that our patience with them is running out. Like if, for example, let's say that a bird flies in the window and infects Jesse Kelly with the next bird flu, and then Jesse Kelly, completely organic, you know, beginnings in this pandemic of a bird flu starts this summer. We're going to blame the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. It doesn't matter about the bird. Anything really bad that happens, we're going to blame them. And they understand that we no longer trust them. We trust them not zero, but negative 100 out of 100. And so they are at the point where, in a sense, as they say, the mask has to come off. They can't trick people as well anymore. So they have to just force it, which means pedal to the metal. And it's all hinging on the election coming up in November.
I'm glad you bring up trust, James, because this actually goes back to where you and I probably do disagree in the beginning of, I say that we can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You believe we can. And I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. That's what I believe. But it's the trust thing that gets me, James, because you can't have a nation where the people don't trust their institutions at all. That does, those two things don't go together. Well, if the institutions aren't interested in earning back our trust, then how do we get a nation again? Because we must merge those two worlds again.
I look back again to the Civil War. I don't think that we're going to have a pleasant coming period of time. Years on the short term is going to be very ugly. Decades are going to be very challenging. But I think we do have the opportunity to break the spell of this cult and to remove its villains from power. Not easily, but I see the opportunities. They're backing off from ESG. We've toxicified DEI. The big lawsuits are coming. It'll get heard by the Supreme Court. They're getting desperate. And so we have the opportunity to start turning our institutions. And I look not just to the Civil War, but to the Revolutionary War, where 40% of the population on this continent were loyalists. And only 3% were actually full-blown patriots that were involved in fighting the Revolutionary War and liberating this nation from British rule. And so, as a matter of fact, I think that it doesn't take everybody being on board. It takes a few people on board. And then what happens is, as things move over time in the other direction, the people who follow the winds as the winds blow will follow in that direction as well. I think that we actually can have institutional reform. It will take a while to earn back the trust. And in the meantime, we're like an airplane that's instruments have gone out, but competent pilots could still land such a plane.
Why don't you think red states could survive on their own? And I understand about the world getting involved and whatnot, but they are so wealthy and powerful. A state like Texas, they have an economy the size of Russia's. Of course that it could be its own thing if it wanted to be. Again, not cheering for it, but economically, it definitely could.
Well, yeah, that's true. There are a couple of issues. One is that if it's deemed a rogue actor by a very desperate global conglomerate, it's going to be in a lot of trouble. It's not going to be a nice divorce, an amicable divorce. There's not going to be the ability for this state to organize itself quickly, to get itself on its feet economically. Maybe it's already on its feet, but the rest of the politics, the foreign relations, all of the rest is going to be a big mess. But then it's also the fact that Texas is not this red monolith. In fact, Texas is a big project for the left to flip it blue. Texas's cities, Dallas is a disaster, Austin is a disaster, Houston is a disaster. San Antonio is a disaster. So what's going to happen is you've got a very divided, internally divided Texas. And so you just take the same game and play it again internally. And I guarantee you that the sleeper cells, not from coming across the southern border, but that too, are already there to make sure that the internal agitation of a new state of Texas that would say is independent from the United States is going to be a serious hot mess. And so the situation for Texas will not, or anything that secedes off, is not going to be stable enough to be able to mount the kind of defense against the global pressure that it's likely to receive.
How do you address the fact that people are already doing it? I guess that's really one of my main arguments, is it really doesn't matter whether you support or don't support national divorce. It's obviously no one's going to sit down and have an amicable divorce and divide things up. I'm not naive, but people are already doing it. They don't want to live in New York. They don't want to live in hell. They're moving out. They're moving to Florida. They're moving to Texas. People are voting with their feet. You can't stop it. It can't be stopped. What your opinion on it is, or mine, doesn't really matter. They're separating.
Well, I mean, I agree. There is definitely what has been referred to as a big sort happening in the United States. Yeah. Red people are moving toward red things. Blue people are also moving toward red things. Blue people are not moving toward blue things, primarily because blue things suck. It's just a fact of the matter. They're fleeing the catastrophes that they have and bringing their bad politics with them, primarily, and that's its own problem. That reflects on what we're talking about overall. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of people who are staying and fighting. We've got Aaron Friday putting up a ballot initiative to fight back against the gender and queer theory stuff in California. We've got Gary Tan, who is, you know, Y Combinator guy, that is basically doing a single-handed battle for the city of San Francisco and not doing badly. You have groups in New York City that are fighting for their city. You have Cacagni, being the Chinese Americans there in particular, are doing a fabulous job. And, you know, then there are the grassroots organizations in every blue state that I visited that are as fired up as anything, and they understand that the writing's on the wall. So some people are staying and fighting. And the fight that they're putting up is actually considerable and admirable, and I don't want to discount those people either. So, you know, I don't want to see a star come off the flag. I understand that things are happening, things are moving, but I don't want to also lose track of the people that are putting up the boldest and bravest of the fights, you know, risking their own children, risking their own futures in order to do that in these heavily conquered places. And just not that it's the U.S., but Canada is the same situation. The whole province of Alberta is basically fighting back now and making a real stand that's really admirable.
James, tell me about the queering of the American child.
I actually luckily received my own copies today, so I have like five, and so I can show you a copy. The Queering of the American Child is a new book. It's out now. It's available now. And queeringbook.com, if anybody wants to go, have an easy landing page for it. The idea was to communicate to parents. It's about queer theory. What is it? Why is it a cult? Why is it Marxism? And how did it get into the schools? And so then it's focused almost entirely on the queer theory and critical education theory pipeline into trying to capture children. The basic summary of the book would be that queer theory is the doctrine of a religious cult. That cult is based on sex. It primarily targets children. It has very little to do with being gay. And in fact, it can be stopped. But we have to understand it to stop it. And so the book lays out in easily accessible terms. The other guy, the main author, Logan Lansing, you see on the cover there, who wrote it so that his blue-collar dad would understand every single paragraph. And it is all I've heard from people who've read it early is how easy it is to read and how it's a true page turner. And since I didn't write it, I can brag about that. It's really an accessible guide for parents and grandparents and teachers out there who need to understand what's happening in their schools and what's happening to their children and how they can protect them.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the men who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor: Stories of Courage from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Robert Blake, the first Black sailor to be awarded the medal, to Daniel Daly, one of only 19 people to have received the Medal of Honor twice. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can still brag about your own writing, James. I do it all the time. I reviewed my own book. I thought it was phenomenal.
Oh, I reviewed this one too. I gave it a blurb. Yeah.
James Lindsay, it is queeringbook.com. Go get it, James, my friend. I appreciate it. All right. Final word, last word with me next. All right, let's wrap this up. I don't expect you to be happy about this special, about everything we just talked about. I'm not happy about this. It's hard seeing a new future. It's hard letting go of what you've always known, what your parents have always known. I don't celebrate it. I think it's just terrible. I hate that this is the period of time that you and I, that we've been given, but this is the period of time we've been given. No, I don't think my dreams of sitting down and working it all out and dividing up the assets and liabilities, and I don't think that's going to happen, but we are separating, just a matter of how and when. All right? All right. We'll do it again.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, the unexpected, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the man who went down that day.
On Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, you'll hear about these heroes and what their stories tell us about the nature of bravery. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.